This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're at, in the U.S. or around the world. Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box. Thanks for joining us, folks, in the U.S. and around the world. We're in 100-plus countries. Lots of coaches, players, and parents listen to us. Thank you very much. And aloha, ESPN Honolulu. We are thrilled. We've been on for a couple weeks now on ESPN Honolulu. Want to thank all of you for listening. Join us. Don't forget, go to baseballoutsidethebox.com for the audio and subscribe. Also, YouTube, right? We're live on YouTube. Subscribe there. Get those updates. And we're live on Facebook. If you got any questions on Facebook, just type them in the comments section. We will be glad to ask those questions to our special guest. And let me tell you, this is going to be awesome. Now, we're going back in time, and then we're coming to the future. We're also going to be in Honolulu right now, and I'm going to welcome, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about him before I start. But if I read everything he did, we'd be here for hours. But let me tell you, this is going to be a fantastic show. First of all, a professor at the Department of Kinesiology. He's written several books, played at California State University, signed with the Expos, his master's degree at USC, doctoral at BYU, coaching career at the University of Hawaii. What a great, great university, and what a great place for producing athletes. He retired in 1986. He's written the book, The Scientific Approach of Hitting. Research explores the most difficult skill in sports. This is going to be outstanding. Let me welcome, and then we'll get into more of his background. Let me welcome Dr. Coop Duren. Doctor, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, Pete. Thank you so much to have me on your show.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is an honor for me because first I had your son on, and he is outstanding, a brilliant young man. But off the air, I told you, being with the ABC 39 years now and being coaching 39 years, I was there when you guys did a presentation with Human Kinetics on the biomechanics of the swing, and we'll get into that. So I know Tom House for a long time. I've heard you about you so many times, and it's amazing. It took me 39 years to get to know you. To finally meet you. So again, an honor, and it's I'm looking forward to this. Love to start it with, let's go back in your background, because you moved to the University of Hawaii.
That's correct.
How did you make that choice?
I was in the Peace Corps for a couple of years, and I was trying to decide, where am I going to end up in my career? I just graduated from the University of Southern California. I was in the Peace Corps, inner city teaching, and I didn't know where I was going to end up coaching. Am I going to go back into professional baseball as a manager? Baltimore Orioles offered me a managerial job, and I didn't know where I was going to go, if I was going to go back and get my PhD. So I thought I would take an R&R and go to Hawaii. And I signed up for 2 years to teach in Hawaii, and I coached in Hawaii for those first 2 years. And then I decided, I fell in love, got married, and I decided to stay in Hawaii and then see where my career would go. So then I started my PhD program at BYU, going flying back and forth to Provo, Utah for 5 years and graduating. And during that time, I was teaching intermediate and coaching high school. And then I thought, eventually, do I really want to go back into professional baseball, or do I want to coach, collegiately? And the only opportunity, if you're going to do it collegiately here, Division I course at the University of Hawaii, Manoa. And I was fortunate enough that I got to know head coach Les Murakami, and he was starting the program in 1974-75. And then he asked me to come on coaching to be his only mainland experienced coach, which I accepted to do, still teaching at Quantico Intermediate School. And then a year later is when I graduated university, and we knew that I was going to graduate in a year. And then we didn't know if I would be hired as a professor at the university. Well, we went to a lot of prayer, and you know, we try to have the Lord, as you know, when you spoke to my son, really try to guide and direct us. And that's how I got my degrees and came to Hawaii to begin with, trying to follow the Lord. And so it's just, we prayed about it as a family, that if the University of Hawaii job, a professor job opened up, then this is what the calling of the Lord would be. And it did. As soon as I graduated that summer, the position opened up that summer. I got hired on our kinesiology department and physical education department as well. And then my career began as a professor. And then I was coaching at the university, and we began the program together. So my life has been a pioneer. And as a professor, you have to publish or perish. You know, we use that phrase all the time. And the first 3 or 4 years, I didn't do much of research. I just basically did my teaching load, didn't do much research. And what I was looking for is, eventually I will have to, where will the Lord guide and direct me? But my focus is on my classes and my coaching career. And we did very, very well. Coach Les is just a fantastic man to work with. He had a great network locally. And then because of my background all over the mainland, I had a nice high school collegiate background of coaches, players that I played with. And we used them, because now they're starting to coach in local high schools and universities. And especially at the high school level, we started recruiting on the mainland as well. And that was my focus at the time. Once we established the program was successful, then knowing if I'm ever going to get promoted, which every professor is, you know, trying to do as well, because you got a family, and I'm starting a young family, then you have to do research. And that course led me into where. So I sat down again, prayed, and Lord led me to, okay, what can we do in the game that's never been done before?
And I want to stop you just for a second, because we're gonna get to that. And first of all, you picked a great state, great city, obviously Honolulu. You know, the other part is, and you mentioned a couple of times, isn't it amazing when you really take the time, you know, and not just ask but pray consistently. You know, sometimes it doesn't always happen right away, but boy, do those things come true, because God's always there for you. So I love that you said that. But I do want to ask you about this before we get into your research, because that's the key to this. But the other part is, you also, I believe your grandfather was in baseball. You know, you were in baseball. Your sons were in baseball. Kind of talk a little bit about that.
Well, yes, my grandfather pitched for the Pittsburgh Pirates for 15 years, and he also pitched for Detroit and the Cubs. In fact, he is up for the Hall of Fame this coming year. And wow. I've been doing quite a bit of research and looking at his career. And he's up for what we call the old Veterans Committee. So he'll be voted on this year. Wow. My father played for my grandfather when he became a manager. And he played for them a couple of years. And that's how my dad and my mom met. He was dating the manager's daughter, basically. And then my father went up through the minor leagues and got to, he tells the story that he got to spring training with the Pirates, and he made the ball club. And unfortunately, World War II was in session. And then he was drafted, and he went into the war, and he got shot in both legs, and his career ended completely. So his baseball career ended at that point. Then I come along, in raising the game, and it was very important to my mom and dad that I would go to college, because my dad gave up a college, even he would Big Ten scholarships to go and play professional baseball to take care of to send his brother and his sister through med school. And because he sent them through med school, when my dad got shot and was brought to Walter Reed Hospital, they were going to amputate my dad's leg. And my uncle and aunt flew in and took care of him and saved his leg. So it all kind of went full circle. So I'm very proud and happy that, you know, in an unfortunate circumstances, that my uncle and my aunt were there for my dad. And then he just wore a brace the rest of life. And I only saw him wearing his brace, but it didn't hinder him teaching and coaching us the game and other sports.
Well, what a great legacy for all of the Rent family. Boy, that's outstanding. And I one more question before we get into research, and that, you know, you went to Hawaii, so you weren't born there, but I'd love to get your opinion on why it, you know, it's a small state when it comes to, as far as population, why they have so many great major league players, collegiate players, high school players. What's your opinion of why there's so many good players coming out of Hawaii?
I think the main reason is we have good, outstanding coaches. We have coaches that seek knowledge. They'll seek information. They go to the ABCA conventions. There are ex-major league players that are older than are my age, 75 years old. And we have what we call an old man's fraternity. And that fraternity is getting larger and larger, which is made of ex-professional players or coaches coming from Hawaii. And we have hosted clinics. I had Tom House, you know, a very good friend of mine. We'll get into Tom later. I brought him over for clinics. We've taken all of us to outer islands to spread the information that we've generated. And then these coaches that are coming back that come from Hawaii that play professional baseball or coach, they come back every year and then they help kids and coaches. So you have a large pool of, you know, it would be small compared to everybody else in the country, but we're very tight knit here in Hawaii. And the knowledge that we all either generate or share from the experiences we have is now going out. My son did a Zoom series last year during the COVID. Every week he was on with all the coaches in Hawaii sharing information through all, and he had different speakers throughout all the mainland to share information. And I think now we just are turning out better and more committed coaches.
You know, I love hearing that. I'll tell you why, because, you know, you and I, you know, and you've been coaching a lot longer, but I think we all understand that if you're going to build a successful program at any level, especially at the grassroots level, coaching is the key to success, to keeping kids in the game longer. I think we all understand that. I think that's why Hawaii's been so successful. Now, you called yourself several times, you and Tom, pioneers. I'm Italian, so unfortunately, I sometimes use the word godfather, you know, the godfather of, you know, when it comes to the kinesiology or the biomechanics of the swing, throwing, bat speed, throwing speed and all that. You guys started that research in the 80s, the first ones ever to do it in baseball. So let's talk about that. Talk about why you started it and what was the beginning of it.
Well, 1980, we just came back from the College World Series, and we came in second to the University of Arizona, which, by the way, is where my son went to college, and he talks about that all the time. And he's just a year old at the time, and I've been a professor since 1976, and now I've got to start doing research. And I thought, okay, where am I going to, in what area and how? So I decided, okay, I'm going to do some research in the game because I've got a young son and other high school kids are going to be coming up. And what is true and what is truth? And I wanted to be different since I have and come from a scientific background instead of opinion. If you pick up Tony Gwynn's book, Ted Williams' book, and all the pitching books at the time, there was a hitting camp. One camp in the country was looking at Ted Williams' swing in his book, Science of Hitting. And then you look at Walt Reniac, and then you look at Charlie Lau, and they had a different hitting camp. And the question always came up is, those are opinions. Yeah. Can we prove one or the other or a hybrid or so? So I decided, okay, I'm going to prove what are the greatest hitters in the world. How do they swing the bat? And what are the greatest pitchers in the world? How do they throw a pitch? In order to do that, you have to have the most sophisticated scientific equipment in the country. And that, we call that, it's a motion analysis system. And there's several companies that produce it. But the one that we selected is the aerial system, because you can take that aerial system and capture how a person swings a bat or pitches, and it can be used in a live game setting. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted it to be different. One, not just go into a laboratory, which is where we could have gone, but we wanted to do live. And so I needed to look at not only that's the biomechanics of the swing, but I wanted to know how to train a hitter to become a better hitter and a better pitcher. So the one measurement that we could do in throwing is velocity.
Yeah.
And two measurements that we could do at hitting is bat velocity and what we call bat quickness. And we can capture those three with this motion analysis system. But you can also use the ray gun that we use, the standard ray gun that you see the professionals, scouts use. Mm-hmm. Well, the one I had to have was specially built. And you have to, I guess the public has to understand the equipment that I use is in research, okay? And it's different than all the different kinds of metric instruments that are used today. The ones that are used today are for the fans, for the media, and it's also can be used very well for whatever a high school, university, or professional team organization has those kinds of equipment used. But you can't take that the equipment and go into the scientific community. Okay, that's a whole different quote ball game. Okay, so back in the day, I had to get companies. And I, for instance, I got my University of Hawaii engineering company to build me my first bat velocity computer. There was no such thing on the market. There was no way we could measure a bat, even if we were to do it in a laboratory. And those, I had to only use it in a laboratory before the motion analysis system could capture it live in a game. Then we had to look at how, in order to study ball velocity coming out of the hand of the pitcher, I had to have the motion analysis system as well, but I had to have the ray gun to do it as well. Now, the two have to be calibrated, and you have to validate the two instruments through a scientific process. So I had the scientific community. I had to write articles on the equipment, specially made, and get the scientific community that are in my human performance profession to validate that the equipment, quote, is valid, and it's workable and usable. Once we got the equipment to be sanctioned, quote, then we could use it on live subjects, okay? Now, what I then had to do was who could I get in Hawaii? I get my university students, I can get high school students, but I want to broaden the range of my subjects. So fortunately enough, as I said, when I was a player and I was on the mainland as a coach as well, I have a lot of friends in the game that are high school coaches. So I went to California, Arizona, and I was able to get high school subjects, okay, college subjects from our college friends that we used to play against when I was coaching at the University of Hawaii. So I had all of these coaches willing to be subjects, okay, in our research. So that took me years. So what I'm explaining to you is over time, I was in the fall, we did it only in the fall, I had to travel to all the mainland high schools and universities that are in our research projects. And then I had to monitor them. So I had to take a sabbatical. I took a sabbatical for 6 months and go monitor. And I had all the coach, no weight training by any subject, because that would confound the research data that we would gather. It's part of the throwing of the weighted balls and bats that I'm talking about now is in a research environment. You can't compound the problem with weight training. So we had to get the subjects, the coaches willing not to do any weight training. And we had to monitor every swing, every pitch by the coaches. And then when I went my circuit, I would go and visit all the schools every week. I would then monitor them to see if they're conforming to the scientific methodology, or if not, then the data would be useless. So that's how we collected it at the time.
And once you did this, you were the one thing you were trying to do, and that's what you said earlier. You're trying to identify the best biomechanics for pitching and hitting. An example, and I read that like in hitting, you mentioned, and this could have changed, but you mentioned the four absolutes of hitting: dynamic balance, kinetic length, bat lag, axis of rotation. One, does that still stand today? Has any of that changed? Because I remember seeing your video with Human Kinetics on the swing analysis and everything that you guys did. And it doesn't really seem to have changed at any time.
No, those four absolutes, that we call them absolutes, they have not changed. They're based, and I think people have to understand this. When I went to collect my data, I needed to have the data. How do I say this? I need the data to compare. And I wanted to know what are the best in the country doing? So we went back to look at all of the Hall of Fame hitters, and we got all of their video and then redigitized it and looked at their swings. Then we looked at the best hitters of the game during each era, which is the 80s, 90s, and then of course into the 2000s, because I got all that data, because we're constantly now, through our biokinetic company that Tom House and I started, we're collecting all of this live data that we're getting of how the best swing the bat, throw their pitches. Okay, so once we got our data from our own subjects, we have a comparison. So once we looked at the very best, they have those four absolutes. And we did the same thing in pitching. That has not changed, Pete. What has changed today is the emphasis of the bat path. As the bat starts, okay, coming forward, the path of the bat to contact, the emphasis today is to hit the ball in the air, more of a higher launch angle, okay? But what has been the result of it? The result of it is, in the last 3 years, and this is going on this year as well, we've had more strikeouts than hits in high school, college, and now professionally. Wow. Now, the question I ask is, if it's in high school and college, we got the aluminum bat. How can we have more high school strikeouts and college strikeouts with an aluminum bat, which is a great advantage, okay,
yep,
than we do with wood? And then it comes back down to, well, we're emphasizing get the ball in the air. Well, if you look at the Ted Williams and you look at Joe DiMaggio and you look at all the other power, Henry Aaron. When you look at all of their home run statistics, you look at their walk strikeouts, they're even. Mm. Okay, they're close to being even. And when I had a chance to talk to Ted a long, long time ago and a few other Hall of Fame hitters, they wanted to get the ball in the air, but there's no measurement in those days. We didn't measure them, but they could see the flight of the ball, right? So they knew, okay, I got under the ball a little too much. Tomorrow it's a line drive. They're emphasizing, I want to hit the ball hard, consistently to all fields, and especially when I get the two strikes, put the ball in play. We're losing some of that ideas today. That's the problem I have with the game, is the strikeouts today by emphasizing getting under the ball and lifting the ball. But when you're doing that, pitchers, of course, are throwing higher. Now we get more strikeouts.
I love that one. First of all, that you're a researcher, professor, you got your doctorate, but you're also a baseball coach. You can mix all that together. How would you change this? And I hate seeing it at the high school and college level. Now it's going to, because it's going to filter down to the young kids. And I know it's filtered there because, I'll give you an example. I was very fortunate. I've been to Cuba 9 times. I was doing a seminar in Cuba, and I couldn't believe it. One of the coaches said, you know, we're having problems with we're working with 12-year-olds. We're having problems with launch angle. So it's even reached Cuba, which is very hard to get to. What would you do to change the direction of where we're going in this aspect?
Well, I think first, we're starting to see there's a few young hitters today that are now understanding contact is really important. Mm-hmm. And walks are important, because the name of the game is runs. On base percentage is the most important statistic that we can have today, with, of course, power as well, but more so is the on-base statistic. There are a handful that I've been following, and now I'm hearing on Major League Baseball, now they're starting to say, well, is the strikeout now, is that the cause of the launch angle? And there's a handful of young players that are coming up who are saying, No, I'm a contact type of a hitter. You got the Soto player out of Washington. Yeah. You got the infielder out of, and I can't think of his name, it starts with an M, that came from Washington State.
Okay. Here in Chicago with the White Sox.
That's right. He's with the White Sox. Now, those two have, and there's a handful of others, have seen. And you look at Mike Trout. Mike Trout was interviewed years ago saying, how come you have somebody, you got to strike out a game, yet you're still a three-plus hitter? And he started to change that. He started now to take more walks. And look at his strikeout walk ratio versus it was 5 years ago. And so you start looking at some of the pendulum is going to start to swing back a little bit. To answer your question, it's always the same thing. Timing is number one. You have to have either you're on time, late, or early. That has never changed. Right. If you're on time, you can hit the ball. Okay. And we want to hit the ball always hard, always solid, and we want to get the ball in the air. So you want to say hit a line drive. Ted Williams used the phrase hit, and his idea was the line drive is par excellence. He had 521 home runs, and he was the first guy to have all the shift against him, but he still understood I've got to hit the ball line drives. And you look at his walk strikeout ratio. It's incredible to a Reggie Jackson, let's say, that had all of those strikeouts and few walks. So I think the pendulum is swinging back, but I think today's coaches must emphasize we're trying to be on time. We're trying to hit the ball hard and solid consistently. We're going to use all three fields and not just your pull field. They're all three are equal. And we're going to hit the line drive. Yeah, you're going to get some hard ground balls. You're going to get some fly balls. But the goal should be hit the ball hard with line drives. And that's what I teach. And I think that's coming back now. It's starting to come back.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think because we talked about it just 2 days ago about seeing some of the teams making adjustments and changes. Matter of fact, one of those teams is here right here in Chicago, the Chicago Cubs. They made some drastic changes in their ability to hit the ball hard. In your research, did you find, you hear a lot about, get on top slightly and backspin on the ball, or are we talking about trying to hit behind the baseball? And then if you hit behind it, you're either going to lift it a little bit or you're going to hit a line drive or possibly get on top?
Well, that's a loaded question. The height of the pitch coming in will dictate how the bat gets the ball, how the hitter's going to get the ball. The lower the pitch, okay, he's going to have to get underneath the ball to get the ball in the air, okay? Mm-hmm. The higher the pitch, such as a high strike, if you go under the ball, your risk of striking out, missing the pitch. So you've got to get on top of the ball to get the line drive. When you come through the ball, backspin will get you the line drive, but you're going to come down on the ball on a higher pitch. Level ball, right down the middle, you want a level swing, right? The path of the bat will dictate the height of the pitch or the height of the launch angle, okay? The goal is always the same. You want to hit the ball dead center. You want to hit the ball hard. You want to hit the ball out in front, and that'll give you backspin, okay? You want to extend your hands through the ball, okay? You don't want to be late, okay? And you don't want to be early. And that's what pitchers are trying to do. They're trying to mess up your timing. And again, hitting is all about timing. And when I analyze hitters, I look at the contact. How solid was the contact? What happened at contact? And then back it all the way up to the beginning from a stance through the swing.
Interesting. Yeah. I love the way you put that. So simplistic and so easy to understand. The other part of this, you got a lot of strikeouts. Pitchers are increasing velocity. Obviously, you're seeing it. They're coming out of the pen, every one of them, 97, 98, 99. Hitters need to be on time, you mentioned. You found out in your research that you can increase bat speed. Now, question would be, if you can increase bat speed, that gives you more time to see the baseball. So we're talking about a visual part here also. So is that true? And how do we increase that bat speed? Should hitters be working more on that?
I think there's several ways to work on your bat speed. Number one, your mechanics, you have to look at, and that's between the hitting coach and then the analysis or the analytic coaches as well. Look at, see if there's any flaw in the mechanics of the swing. That's number one. Okay. We can measure even in the lab in hitting cages, you can measure the bat velocity. So you look at the mechanics and see if the mechanics are a problem. You have to go into a quote, a weight training environment to increase bat velocity. So that's where the weighted bats and balls come in that I used. You can take weighted bats, okay? And we found if you have bats that are heavier, 12%, and 12% lighter in a combination over a 3-month, 4-month period, you can increase the velocity of that bat, okay? And that's where I started with Easton Bat Company. I got 100 bats years and years ago, and looking at all the different weights that I asked them to make and the different lengths and such, because I wanted to see if we could increase the velocity through the scientific method. And that's what we tried to do at the time. But I stole the information. You know, I'm proud to say I got it through a friend of mine that speaks Russian. And we got all of this information from all the iron countries at the time in the Soviet Union, iron countries. And they were using their weighted implements in track and field. And we even used the shot puts on our shot putter at the University of Hawaii. And he broke the world's record using weighted shot puts. Wow. He did it on our campus in 1976. So we know that the implements themselves in an environment, a weight training resistance environment, if you follow the right protocol, Pete. See, today when I see all the different weighted balls on the market today, the weighted balls, the protocol hasn't been established in science. You know, and that's what I would caution any young boy, any coach today. Okay, I'm going to go purchase driveline baseballs. Okay. The question is, have driveline or any other company that's selling weighted balls, have they gone through the rudiments of getting the scientific information and going through the scientific process to validate, one, the instrument's got to be validated like we did. And second, the information's got to be validated by it's trial and error of the implement itself. If they spend, you know, and it took me a career to do it, years to get good in a lot of subjects. You've got to get different types of subjects, high school subjects, and you got to get collegiate subjects and then professional subjects. If you're going to try to sell these balls to those different populations, right? Therefore, you've got to study them at those different levels under a scientific environment. And if you don't do it, then it comes back to what's an opinion, because you haven't done the hundreds and hundreds of subjects that we have tested back in the day. Because it took me 20 plus years to do all of the ball velocities and the bat studies that we did, collecting all this data. It took a long time. It took a career. That's why we say we're pioneers doing it. And I encourage, and there's other professors following us. Zanikowski from he's from Tulane now. He's followed us in softball and in baseball as well, and he's using implements, and so it's nice to see that there are coaches that are getting more scientific or using the scientific public to be able to validate the information that they want to use. So we have to be real, real careful before we're going to use it experimentally on a youth, let's say, or on a teenager or a young adult. We have to be very careful.
I remember 20 years ago, that was my first introduction, I believe, and time flies, to weighted balls. And one of my concerns was, you know, okay, we're seeing velocity increase, but what are we doing to the body is what I didn't know. What are we doing to the elbow, the shoulder, whatever it may be? And that was a big concern. I think that's kind of why I slowed down and kind of got away from it, because I was just afraid that, you know, we could be hurting somebody even though we're increasing velocity. Now, you kind of started all this, and I'm not trying to blame you for all the injuries, obviously, because you were doing the right thing. You were trying to figure out how the motion works, obviously in a healthy way, how to train it. And that's the part I want to ask you about is, Now you had to take all your research and figure out how we're going to train this effectively and safely. And you could take hitting or pitching, however you like. What was that step like? How'd you start that?
Okay, well, the most complicated one would be pitching, obviously, because there's more variables. You know, the shoulder is the most mobile joint in the body. And, of course, the health of the arm is critical. Okay. I get this question asked that you asked me quite a bit. When we did our all of our throwing and pitching velocity research studies, it was in the off season, and they're not playing another sport. We isolated these young folks so that we were always monitoring the health of the arms. So we were able, through years of doing this, to come up with a safe protocol for winter. Okay, the problem also is you've got a young arm at 16 and an 18-year-old. They're not the same. Mm. One may have a growth with their growth plates are still trying to reach maturity. And then you've got an 18-year-old that's actually a 20-year-old in college, even though from an age standpoint, from a maturity standpoint. Okay, so when you're going to train, for me, I'll never use a weighted ball. Now, we only use the 3 and 5, 3 and 6 ounce balls. Okay, 1 ounce above, 1 ounce below. That's all that research shows. You don't have to go any higher. If you go higher than the 6 ounce and the 4 and lower than the 4 ounce, you're going to get negative effects. And I'm worried that when you start to throw a baseball that's heavier than 6 ounces, you're getting out of their biomechanical arm path. And now you get more like a shot throw. Okay. And I worry about that. Okay. So if you're going to try to increase the velocities of a high school pitcher, I only would say you need to get a wrist x-ray to show that the growth plates are closed. So he's got no elbow or shoulder, more growth to grow. Then I'm only going to work it with them. I'm not going to use my freshmen, sophomores. They have a young arm. It's immature. And we don't have research on them. And I didn't want to do research on them for a lot of reasons. Okay. Now you go to the college pitcher. Okay. The college pitcher's got a mature arm. Okay. You can use the weighted balls off season to increase velocity, providing you follow our protocol. And I keep saying follow the protocol because coaches, they're just going to go, okay, I've got the balls. I got the weight of, how do I use them? Well, you got to know the protocol, which is what we wanted to establish besides the weight of balls themselves. Okay. Which we did. Okay. And we got the results we did. Okay. So you need to do both. All right. If you're going to mix that with weight resistance, okay, that's a question the coach has got to ask themselves. Is it valuable to do it or not? Okay. It's hard for me to answer that question because I've seen pitchers do it where they're weight trained and then use the balls, but we don't have data on them. Okay. So I can't really answer that question. I think I would be a little leery to do it. I may have my pitchers not weight train for 3 months, use the weighted balls. Okay. Or do my weight training, let's say 3 or 4 months, stop, go into my weighted balls, and then go right into the season. That makes good sense to me, and do it that way.
You know, for our coaches in the U.S. around the world, would it be safe to say, on the safe side, wait till young people, and I'm saying, you know, maybe even 13 under, wait till they're fundamentally a little better in their motion, wait till they're a little bit stronger, a little bit older, before you even start implementing any weighted ball programs.
Exactly. Okay. Again, like I mentioned to you or emphasized, Pete, the youth arm is different than the mature arm. The youth arm is all based on your plate close, growth plates. The growth plates are all over the body, obviously, and all the joints, okay? But the key are your wrist, elbow, and shoulder. If those growth plates are closed, you've got a mature arm. He's an adult. You may be in a 16, 17-year-old body, okay? The only way you're going to know is you've got to get an orthopedic, or you need your practitioner, doctor, to take x-rays to determine that. Then I would then begin a weight-to-ball program with the mature arm, which is, to me, I've only done seniors. And all the seniors that we did, the hundreds of them that we did, were all mature arms. We had all the wrist x-rays we did to put them in, quote, that adult category. And, of course, all the collegiate pitchers that we tested in the offseason that did our weight program, they went through their x-ray process as well, and their growth plates were closed. So any youth player, I would never give them any weighted ball at all. I wouldn't even give them weighted bats yet. And the bats are safer.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of bat studies as well, but I would caution. I would say absolutely no, don't do it.
What would you say right now with the industry seeing a lot of injuries? You know, we're seeing it in Major League Baseball. We're seeing it in other in collegiate high school players. A lot of it has to do with throwing velocity. You know, I remember having a talk with somebody on the show about the UCL can only be, you know, maintain so much velocity. And after it gets to a certain point, it's dangerous. So there may not be one simple answer, but for now, with all these injuries that are occurring, because guys are definitely throwing harder, what's the solution to keep some of these guys safe?
if you and I could solve that problem, you know, we'd be hired by every major league team in the country, right? I think you have to look at, and I wanted Dr. Jim Andrews, who's a good friend of mine. I wanted through his ASMI program, I wanted him to, since he's doing all the surgeries, he's got all the major league pitchers. What is needed is we need to study the shoulder elbow, and we need to study it from a health standpoint, looking at the healthy arms that have been produced through their careers. Okay, so you look at Tom Seaver, you look at Nolan Ryan, you look at the left-hander for the Phillies. Randy, but there's other one for the Phillies way back when and during that time. I would go to ASMI, I would go to Dr. Andrews and say, look, let's study the best that have ever thrown through their entire time that they went from a little league all the way through and find out what are some commonalities of why they're successful in a longevity career. And going back, just take one of the variables, which is weight training. Okay. If you take weight training, most of these pitchers probably did weight training in high school. And then if they went to college, then they did weight training in high school and college. Now they become a professional. Well, if they played for two or three organizations, they may have had different weight training programs. They may have different throwing programs, okay? So now you've got a major variable here to look at. Why are we still getting Tommy John surgeries and why are we getting labrum tears? We need to study the longevity of the best. Why did they have, what were their commonalities? Okay. How much did they throw in Little League? How much rest did they have all the way through? Was it once a week, et cetera? Look at all of those variables of success. Then you have what we call a basis. Okay. You've got a foundation or a basis. When you look at that basis, like we did in hitting, we got the best in the hitters. What were their commonalities just in the swing? I didn't have to worry about their training. It was just the swing biomechanically. But when you're talking about pitching, you got to talk about training because that involves the health of the arm. So I want to baseline the best. Why are they successful? Then you look at why do we have more Tommy John surgeries increases every single year? Why are we having that? What are they doing from Little League? And all the way through, you know, youth baseball, high school, college, and professional baseball. It would take a great study, okay? Sure. And it could be done. It could be done by just asking a lot of the right questions to the best, find out what they did when they were growing up, and then we can ask the questions just in a I'm trying to think of the word I want, you know. I'm sorry, my mind's racing so much, but you could do it in a survey. You could do it in a survey listing all of these variables of just their throwing career. of the best and what we have now that are injured. Okay. And then you could start making some comparisons to say, because we've gone out on a limb. Okay. And we have said we're now overusing the arm. We know that. But where is it really true that all the injuries are because they overthrew when they were in Little League and they added up from Little League or youth into college and high school, et cetera, into professional? Okay. We haven't really established all of that yet. It's, but what we need to establish those baselines of why the best lasted, okay? The healthiest lasted for 15 plus years, right? Okay, and if we do the same thing of the injured, look at their careers from Little League. So you look at how many pitches that they threw. I mean, they remember that I pitched once a week and that, et cetera, all the way through. Okay, then we have then we can start comparing and do a statistical analysis of saying, okay, the injured looks like there's four reasons. They're overthrow, and they started overthrowing in Little League, or they overthrew in high school instead of pitching once a week. Okay, an example, NCAA, when you look at pitcher college coaches today, the best throw weekends, right? Your Friday night pitcher, your Saturday, Sunday, right? They don't throw midweek. Correct? They don't throw midweek. You only play 54 games a season. Okay. So if your best are resting, let's say a week, okay? Well, Little League, is that true? We go on pitch counts in Little League.
Right.
Right? We go on – and the rest, which is critical to the health of the arm. College pitchers are getting more rest than youth and high school pitchers. That's insane. I mean, that's insane, okay? So – we're not strict enough, I don't think, at the youth and high school level. We're not factoring enough of rest. What I do when I coach my little kids, my youth kids, if a pitching coach or myself pitches a player, it's once a week. That's it. He's an immature arm. We can't put data results and ideas on an adult healthy or injured arm onto a youth arm because they're not the same arms. There are mixed variables here. We can't treat the same. I would never weight train a high school player the same I would weight train a college player or a professional. They're different, and the positions are different, okay? I wouldn't weight train a freshman in high school the same as I would do a senior. That senior's mature, and he's got 3 years of weight training behind him. So I know I'm saying a lot of things to the audience, and I do apologize for that. But if we don't get the right baselines to determine why we're getting these injuries, because the injuries are continuing and Major League Baseball is not solving it and the medical profession is not solving it. So it's got to be up to us looking at, to me, baseline the best, healthiest arms and baseline and try to figure out why are we getting the injuries and looking at them.
I love that. I'll tell you what, I love that idea. And I'll tell you why, because, we want to blame velocity, but you look back and a lot of guys threw hard and in the old days too. They threw 98, 99, 100. Nolan Ryan's a great example of it. You know, and then the other part is you already mentioned certain things that could be in that survey, that would be in that survey if you did that research. One of them, I was thinking about this because Tom was on MLB Network with Jim Cott. Jim Cott said, before he even got to high school, he never even pitched off a mound. It was all flat ground, you know? So that's kind of interesting to hear that, because you do hear some research out there saying there's less stress on your arm when you're going on flat ground. But that research would really give us a great idea in that insight and possibly help the game, you know, a lot better.
Well, there's so, everybody's looking for the magic bullet, and yeah. I think we have to start from look at the anatomy of the shoulder and how many variables are in that shoulder that make it move like it does. And when you look at all of the variables with outside the anatomy of the shoulder, which is a coaching variable, you have a growth variable, you have an immature arm versus a mature arm variable, you have training variables, and those variables are from coach to coach, program to program, level to level. And then when you start to mix all of this work, which is off-season and in-season training, on the shoulder that you're asking that pitcher to go out every 4, 5, 6 days, it taxes the shoulder. So you're looking at how many throws. I'm sorry to say that Mike Marshall just passed away, right? We lost a great man.
Yes.
And I had a chance to speak to Mike a little bit. Of course, a lot of people don't know that he was a doctor of physiology. Mm-hmm. And he threw in 106 games as a major league career. And he threw 13 consecutive games. That would be unheard of today. That would never be broken, right? How could that be? Okay, how could Gagne throw the way he threw when he was a Dodger pitcher, reliever as well? There are a lot of pitchers back in the day that threw more than our pitchers throw today. Well, why are we getting more injuries? Is it because we're publicizing them more? Are there more pitchers? Are they throwing harder more? See, those questions need to be answered and in order to solve the problem that we have today. And that's why it's been so difficult, because we're not getting the right answers. I don't think we're asking enough of the right questions myself.
I'll tell you what, I knew this was going to be fascinating, and there's no doubt about it. We're going to have you back, because this is just hitting we're just skimming the ice here at the top here. But it'd be wrong not to ask you this, because there's a lot of coaches out there, again, in the U.S. and around the world. Since we're talking about velocity and pitching, can you at least let the coaches understand what are some of the absolutes of pitching, so they can kind of identify those and make sure the kids are doing it correctly?
I think what's really important, first they ought to go look at Tom House's information. The one thing that Tom did really well is Tom can analyze pitchers a whole lot better than I can. But there's several things you have to have. You know, we talk about balance. A pitcher better be balanced before he starts on the rubber. Now, we have to understand one thing, and I was going to say this a little while ago. There's what we call style of a pitcher or a hitter, and then there's mechanics. The style of a pitcher or a hitter or any other athlete is different from one pitcher to another to another. Hitters, when you look at their stances, when you look at their open stance, closed stance, how they stride, low kick, high kick, those are what we call styles of the hitter. And the question we have to ask is, the style of the pitcher or hitter, does it interfere with good mechanics? Mm. If it interferes, then you got to take away the style, okay? So back in the day, if you look at Nolan Ryan, you look at Tom Seaver, they started face on to the pitcher. They took their hands over their head. That's a stretch that pitchers aren't getting today. Who does that? Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah.
Right? Clayton goes above, right? Now he starts a little side saddle, which is what I would say is his style. But certain things you have to do. To me, I want the stretch right here going overhead. Then you're going to pivot. Once you pivot, you got to be balanced. Okay, you got to be tall, balanced. Now you start your movement to the plate. That movement to the plate, you want as long a stride as possible. Okay, and you must take, and Tom and I talk about, as you're going to the target, you take your nose to the target. You bury it. Mm-hmm. And when you land, that front side is over the knee. So you're bending over the knee. And the reason you're going to do that, Ben, is you got to decelerate the arm. The arm then will then follow through towards the opposite side, glove side. Okay. And then you'd look at, is the pitcher in that stride? Is he straight to the target? If he's taking his nose to the target, that's what you would emphasize, okay? And then once he then releases the ball, you're always on, you want to be on top of the ball, okay? You don't want to be dropping the elbow. And the elbow's got to be higher than the shoulder. Even if you take a submariner and you stand him straight up, his elbow is higher than the hand. I mean, the hand is higher than his shoulder. The elbow is higher than his shoulder, okay? Then as you go forward, you take the nose, long strides, and then as you release and follow through, you've got to get all of that energy and force that you build up in the arm. You got to dissipate it through the ball and body. So then after it releases, you got to follow through to the opposite side. But now you're bent over. You don't want to land on your heel. You want to land naturally on your ball of your foot.
You know, that's one of my concerns, and we're getting close to the end. I want to reach this. One of my concerns is a lot of young kids watch Major League Baseball. I watch it every day now, especially during a pandemic. That's all we can do is watch TV. And so I was watching Major League Baseball. And one of my concerns in understanding, I get that the eyes can fool us. I get that when I'm not slowing the motion down or anything, but I'm watching Major League pitchers. And I want to understand this through your research. I'm watching the Major League pitchers that to me don't look like they're taking everything going home. You know, I'm thinking Nolan Ryan, I'm thinking Greg Maddux. They're not taking everything in that direction. They seem to be spinning off to the side. They seem to be throwing and stopping. It's almost like they're stopping in their tracks. I even see a lefty lift his one foot up and stop right there. And I'm concerned that they're not using their whole momentum to go home. And am I off base here?
No, you're exactly right. I see it too. I watched a lot of Major League Baseball and collegiate baseball as well. When you're not going straight to the target, when you got an accuracy problem. You've always got to remember, baseball is a game of targets. It's a game of accuracy. So the more you fall off to a side, then the arm's going to have to compensate what your eyes are seeing. Okay. All right. By going straight forward. Okay. As you're taking your eyes and head to the ball, you're not wavering with your body as much. The body is, you know, in, you don't want to say in a vacuum, but it's not going side to side. It's not wobbling side to side. But when you fall off, you are. It's going to affect your mechanics, number one, the stress as well, because you're not landing properly. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's going to affect your vision, which we don't. That's a whole different area that I love to talk about because I've done visual studies. And it's critical, you know, in baseball that we have great vision as a hitter as well as a pitcher. And all of that.
And I'm sorry, I apologize. You know, I want to tell you this because Ryan Harrison from Slow the Game Down is a good friend of mine. I know you know, you've known his dad for a long time. He just said hello on Facebook. So I just wanted to get that in there because when you talk vision, Mr. Harrison was one of the, I guess I call him also one of the godfathers of vision training.
Well, I know the father very well. And when I was doing my research in California, we traded information. I would go to his optometry lab and office. And he asked me if he would teach my sons how to swing the bat. And then I would take Ryan and Ryan, we came out and we worked with him in the batting cage. And it's because it was critical to me to understand more about the eyes and Bill knew more than anybody else. And so when my son grew up, he kept testing my son through high school, college. And then when he became a professional, certainly when he was tested several times, when my son was in different organizations, Bill floated around between various major league teams, and he ended up always somehow with my son testing my son's eyes again. But it gets affected when you're not going in a straight line. The more movement of the body, the more the head moves, it'll affect your accuracy. And of course, again, pitching is accuracy.
Yeah, and the other concern is when I watch these pitchers that are kind of falling and spinning and doing some of these things, these funky things, they're still throwing 97, 98, 99. That has to be a concern too, because there's got to be a lot of stress on the shoulder or the elbow.
Yes, the landing, okay, the transfer of momentum and force through going down the mound is more so on flat ground, by the way. So that's okay. So now when you're going down the mound, right, going towards the target, and you start to fall off, if you don't dissipate that force, it's going to back up into the shoulder and elbow. So if you're not landing properly or taking the head and nose directly to the target, you're increasing the possibility of not all of that force dissipating through the hand and ball. Now it could back up into the shoulder and elbow. So it'd be interesting to look at these poor mechanics. That's what I'm going to call them. Okay. Yep. Poor mechanics of falling off and going into the lab, and we could do it in a lab, and just looking at how much force are they generating in their delivery and how much is being dissipated into the ball, and do they have a history of injury? Do they have a history of poor control? Okay, so we have to look at the control and the accuracy of the pitcher is way more important than velocities. Okay. It's more important in hitting to be on time with an 80, 85 mile an hour bat speed that is to swing 110 miles an hour and miss the pitch. Excuse me. So accuracy is critical. Okay. And so the eyes need to be trained at every level. And we need to, and it's going to help the mechanics help in training to make sure that once we have the proper mechanics, we can study the head and eyes through the pitch. We can look at the head and eyes through the delivery. And then you just count. It's interesting. You know, you can take how many strikes, how many balls, where are they? And we got all that data of every pitch in the big leagues, right? Okay. So it'd be very easy to find out, why is somebody not accurate? Is it, and it's going to come back to mechanics. Always. It's always going to come back to mechanics. Is it going to come back to training? Well, it may. Okay. How are they trained? Okay. And those are the two key factors, you know, and I don't want to throw in nutrition and they may, okay. It may be a visual problem. So that's why I tested my vision on my hitters every year. Every year that I coached, at the university, I always got my hitters tested. And when I was coaching with the White Sox, I had every single hitter in the minor leagues tested visually before they even walked out. Because if they have a visual problem, you can't detect it. You right. can't. How are you going to detect a visual problem, right? The only way you can do it is through an optometrist, right? So testing every single player visually is critical as a pitcher and a hitter. Critical.
Awesome. Dr. Duran, listen. We got to get you back because, I mean, we're talking about, we can talk about vision. We talk about actually how you're going to train this. You know, yes. There's so much along with the research that I think we still need to get into. So sure. Promise that you'll be back.
I promise.
All right. We look forward to it. I knew this was going to be a great show. I respect time. I respect your time. I want to thank you so much. If you want last minute words, maybe to our coaches in the U.S. around the world, anything you want to say?
I think what's important to all of us coaches is that I'm pleased with the information that we are generating. And I think it's important that if you step on the field today, that you are best equipped with the best information, not opinion. Opinion may be so. Okay. What Ted Williams's opinion about his swing, we proved it. And he was thankful that we did. And he acknowledged me to thank him because we could finally prove he was right.
Yep.
Okay. So there's great information out there, but there's a lot of misinformation. Okay. And if I'm coaching today, like I am, I want to have the best information as of today so that I take care of my players and give them the best way to succeed and improve. And the other thing is that I want to thank all of you coaches, from the youth coaches all the way up through high school, college, and of course, professionally, because you are so dedicated. You love the game, and I appreciate that you love the game. And you know, I've got four generations of my family that love the game. And I, of course, will continue to love it as much as we do. But my dad and my grandfather would always tell me, you step on the field, be well-equipped, love your players, give them the best. You don't need to holler and scream. You can get your point across different ways. But thank them, thank the parents. I always thank my parents. And you coaches out there, God bless you for seeking the best information that you can get. I'm still learning, I'm still growing. But thank your parents, and you owe it to your players to be the best you can be on and off the field as a role model. You need to be have strong Christian values. And you need to be a strong Christian man. Even if you don't even believe in our Lord Jesus Christ, have those values as you coach and teach, because we're trying to develop good citizens in a very difficult world. And I think that's, to me, that's the best way to do it, is through the Christian values.
Well said, Dr. Duran. Mahalo. Thank you for being on the show. Folks, special thanks again to Dr. Coop Duran. Can't thank him enough for being on the show. Special thanks to our producer, Brian Crock, with the Lineup Media Group. And of course, the best thank you to everybody in the U.S. around the world who listen, watch the show. Can't thank you enough. Keep sharing it, because as you share it, we keep getting into more countries, more people, more coaches, more kids. We're influencing as many as we can. Thank you all. God bless you. Listen, stay safe. Be healthy, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.